Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green. EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO11. Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 4 score years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11.
Ooh, do it, 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 do it.
Absolutely. Sammy Davis Jr., the man in EO11. And, of course, the motion picture, Ocean's 11. Saw it a couple weeks ago. It's in my collection. And you know what? It was made in 1960. One of the few things around here that's older than I am. And it still has legs. Do yourself a favor. I mean, if you've never really been exposed to the Rat Pack mystique and all that whole thing, the Rat Pack mystique and all that, that's a good example of it right there. You just had this posse of insanely cool, terminally hip guys decided to make a heist movie in the same town where they were working every night. James Bostic, a conservative's perspective here, somewhere on Patriot Nation Radio Network at Blog Talk Radio. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a recorded version of the program that rolls out Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you really should be, because it is the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio. You're going to find out their outstanding programming, Top Drawer Mojo. MOJO50, which is self-explanatory, .com. Well, oh, by the way, for those of you who are probably wanting to know what's going on, I do have Mark listed as having a program on tonight, but as it stands right now, the handsome one is probably in the middle of a hurricane. And based on the weather projections, when it came time to schedule the show, he opted not to. I was unaware of this at the time that I created the show, but it's no big deal. I'm sure Mark's safe. We certainly hope he is at any rate, and I know we'll be hearing from him soon, but no show for Mark tonight. Ordinarily, we would be 60 minutes here, And we probably stay 60 minutes, although we have 120 minutes scheduled. We might go into extra innings. It just depends on how crazy things get. And it's been pretty damn crazy here lately. The count goes on. They're doing a hand count of all the ballots, county by county in Georgia. There are court decisions pending, I think, in a couple other different places. I also know that they're counting again in Arizona and Pennsylvania. And as I said in the teaser, you know, the evidence anecdotally and otherwise, it's piling up in practically every Democrat city you care to look at. And that's what we're talking about tonight. Plus, Andy McCabe, that's a blast from the past. We haven't heard from Andrew McCabe in a while. He kind of faded off into the dustbin of history, an ignominious one at that. He testified, I think it was remotely, though, he testified in front of Congress or in front of the Senate the other day, and Ted Cruz got a hold of him. Now, if you'll remember, Andrew McCabe, deputy director of the FBI, and one of the main guys carrying out, he was one of the principals in the coup, one of the principal conspirators in the coup. And Ted Cruz gets a hold of him and wears him out. I'm going to play all that clip right there. Rudy Giuliani back with us this evening. Giuliani the Imperial. I've got to tell you that story. Last January, I was at a political rally in South Carolina called Rock the Red. It's put together by a guy named Presley Stutz and my friends. Don Newen and Donna Fiducia were emceeing this event. Our other good friend, Gary Benford from United Patriots Uprising, was also there. It was the first time I got to meet him. Gary and I had known each other for quite a while by this time, but this was the first time we were able to meet face to face. It was an awesome trip. Had a terrific time. Great speakers. Made a lot of contact with some terrific folks. And one of those folks has been on the show many, many times, and we'll no doubt be back many, many times, Mr. Michael Cutler, a terrific guy. And we've developed a bit of a friendship over the last few months. We talk two or three times a month, and he's a regular on the show. And we were talking that night. Was the first night we met, and I can't remember what we were talking about. And Giuliani's name came up. This was after dinner, and it was a terrific confab. It was Don Newen and Donna Fiducia who he finally broke down and made an honest woman out of the girl about 3 weeks ago. Don and Donna got married, and that was really cool. But anyway, we're sitting there. It's Newen and Fiducia. It's myself. It's Claire Lopez. Trevor Loudon comes by. Mike Cutler comes in. I'm trying to think who else was there. Presley Stutz, the guy that ran the event, was there for a while. Danny Hamilton from Star Coaches was there. He works with Dom works with him. And Tom Del Beccaro. And it was just and for me, this cat from Podunk that's never been anywhere, never seen anything, and here I am plopped down in the middle of this confab of all these tremendous minds. What a treat. Well, anyway, so Cutler and I are talking about something. And Giuliani's name comes up. Now, Michael Cutler, if you haven't heard him on the show, shame on you. I don't know how you've missed him because he's on a lot. He was a 30-year veteran of the Immigration Naturalization Services, and his expertise went into a lot of different fields, counterterrorism, drug enforcement, immigration fraud, organized crime, as all these things pertain to illegal immigration. And Mike was there, and he was in New York for all his career, I'm guessing. The way he talks, it seems that's what it was, because every story comes out of the New York office. And Mike is one of these dry, acerbic – he is a stereotypical New Yorker. And if you've ever heard him, you know what I'm talking about. And so we're talking, and Giuliani's name comes up, and he just kind of rolls his eyes and goes, ah, Giuliani, the Imperial. And then he starts – dish. I'm not going to get into that, but then he starts talking about Giuliani. But Rudy Giuliani is who we're going to talk with next. And say what you want about the rude dog. When it comes to getting to the bottom of things and chasing crooks, he was one of the most feared men in New York by organized crime. This cat, I think he was the chief prosecuting attorney for the Southern District of New York, and that's like a hotbed. That's one of the places where you want to be. Well, anyway, Giuliani is on the president's legal team and a remarkably keen mind. And he's been out there, and he's in the forefront of all these different legal challenges that have been happening in the since Monday, basically. Well, Rude, what I do with you, pal? Should be under G for Giuliani, but that's a J's. So I think we've come in a little hot on the list. Here he is. A long clip, 11 minutes, but like I said, Guap's not on tonight, so we've got some time to play with. And it's better for you to hear these guys than to hear me. I say that all the time. And this is really a good example of that. Rudy Giuliani on Newsmax with the latest updates on how things are going in terms of the legal challenges that the campaign is posing towards everybody except the people who need to be saying it, that Joe Biden is president-elect. Take it, Rudy.
Hey, folks, welcome to the second hour of American Agenda. I'm Bob Sellers. Attorney General William Barr is urging federal prosecutors to examine allegations of voting irregularities before states certify election results in the coming weeks. This says the president and his legal team continued to make the case for election fraud. Joining me now is the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, who's leading this election legal fight. So tell me, sir, how are things going? Where do things stand right now?
Well, after filing the lawsuit yesterday in Pennsylvania, which supported by 50-plus witnesses that say that Republicans were excluded from observing over 600,000 questionable ballots in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and only in those two Democrat corrupt cities, really, rest of Pennsylvania, no problem. We think we have a good chance. Also, when you consider the additional allegations of fraud there, to have that vote overturned and not certified. I mean, the margin of victory was only 40,000 after the president had been ahead by 700,000. And I think we can show that this was part of a concerted effort on the part of the Democrat Party to do this in 10 different states, because the same thing they did in Philadelphia,
conspiracy,
herd the Republicans in corrals, not let them see the ballot. They did it in Pittsburgh. They did it in Detroit. They did it in Milwaukee. They did it in Phoenix. They did it in Las Vegas. They did it in all these places where they have this Democrat, machine. And it's impossible that every one of these
Democrat
leaders woke up the day after the election with the same idea of not allowing Republicans to see the mail ballots and corral them into chutes, even though the law of their state requires that it be observed by a Republican and a Democrat. And forever, we've done that with absentee ballots. Second, we're about to file a lawsuit now in Michigan in which, again, hundreds of thousands of ballots were cast without any observation. A Democrat whistleblower working for the board in Detroit has come forward and has given evidence of days and days of fraud. Preparation for it, backdating of votes, going into the polling place with people, showing them how to vote, taking votes of people that weren't registered, and then actually going to the registrar book and registering at the time. She observed all of this. She was disgusted with it. She's a Democrat. She's come forward. She's given us an affidavit.
All elements of the
she's
conspiracy.
She's at the heart of the Democratic case that we have, which will be filed in Lansing, Michigan, which will show that well more than the margin of victory are illegal votes. And then a very extraordinary thing. Somewhere around 4 or 4:30 in the morning on November 4, right after the election, 100,000 or so ballots showed up at the headquarters. The observers were leaving at that time. So the crooked Democrats in Detroit figured they could count the ballots when the observers weren't around. However, several observers remain behind, and they have given us affidavits. And the affidavits say that these 100,000 ballots that were not properly packaged. They're supposed to be packaged in a big wooden box with an inner box and a seal. They look more like this. some that had come in earlier in the day, they look somewhat more like in boxes like this. Don't know if you can see that.
Okay. Yeah.
No, we're on the radio, Julie.
And then we'll lay it out like that, which completely destroys the secrecy of the ballot. And then all of a sudden they began counting them very quickly. And three different affiants, people who have sworn under oath, this is one of them, Andrew Cito, said that all of these votes, to the extent that he heard them being called out or he observed them, were for Joseph Biden.
Okay,
and every ballot he saw had no one else on the ballot.
Just to be clear, you're talking about that occurred allegedly in Michigan? Is that where you're saying that?
Yes, I'll read you the affidavit.
No, that's okay. You don't have to read it. I just want to make clear where you were talking about.
I'm talking about Andrew Cito in Michigan, in Detroit, Michigan, at the TCF Center. He was there from 9:30 in the morning. He remained behind when many other people left. At 4:30 in the morning, shipment of absentee ballots came in. He was told that there were several vehicles outside with out-of-state license plates. They pulled up to the center at 4:30, and they unloaded many boxes of ballots.
Okay.
Tens of thousands of ballots were brought in and placed on eight long tables.
But, Mr. Mayor, could I ask you a question about the process here? Could I ask you? So you filed suit in Pennsylvania regarding the allegations of fraud that you have. Obviously, you say you're going to go to Lansing as far as this situation. I'm kind of curious, what's the timing here in which you expect to get some sort of answer? How it turns out, what kind of remedy are you looking for?
Well, in the case of both Pennsylvania and Michigan, in fact, in every state, this election is guided by the laws of the state legislature. And then it's the state legislature that has to certify the result as honest and fair. We're in a position in both Pennsylvania and Michigan where they can't possibly do that. And now we will move on to Georgia, where the same thing happened, to Wisconsin, to Nevada, where the same thing happened, to Arizona. It's very, very curious that, on Tuesday night, the president was way ahead by 800,000 votes in Pennsylvania, 5% in Michigan, 8% in Wisconsin. And by the next morning, because of things like this, votes being brought in the middle of the night, the whole thing had changed.
Well, there are people
it happened in all these places. It can't be a coincidence that they decided they would exclude Republican observers in every one of these places at exactly the same time.
Okay. So in Pennsylvania, you have already filed suit regarding these allegations, correct? Do you know when you would get some sort of answer on that issue?
Well, it's up to the court, and of course, it has to be done on an expedited basis. We have to have an opportunity to call the witnesses. We have 50 of them, but their testimony is rather short, and it's all in affidavit form already. We have to make a record and then hopefully bring it to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. At the same time, we'll be moving ahead in Lansing, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
There's already been a private case filed in Michigan 2 days ago, similar to ours, but not as complete.
And how many states total have you made or plan to make allegations similar to this?
I would say anywhere from 8 to 10. All of them are states in which we have one common allegation and then different things. The common allegation is that when they started counting these new mail-in votes, they excluded Republicans from observing.
Okay.
They put Republicans mostly in corrals that were 20 and 30 feet away and wouldn't allow us to see most, if at all, any of the ballots.
And what kind of remedy? What kind of
things like we have these ballots that are brought in the middle of the night. We have backdated ballots.
Right.
The ballots had to end on November 3rd, according to Justice Alito. We have thousands and thousands and thousands that have been backdated, and we have witnesses for all of them.
Okay.
So we have numerous instances of fraud, but the common theme is excluding Republicans in 10 different places. And the same system was used has to have been a common objective.
Now, if the states come back and say, yes, they were allowed to observe, or even though they were not permitted to observe as you would wish. What do you think the remedy should be? Throwing out every ballot, throwing out the ones involved with that? What would you expect a remedy
to be? First of all, the states aren't going to come back and say they weren't counted the way we wish. They weren't counted based on the law of the state. Each one of these states.
So how does it resolve itself? If they come out, if they were to say, you're absolutely right, that is what happened, and of course we know there'll be arguments against that, but if they say, yes, you're right, how do you think this resolves itself? What happens?
Well, first of all, the votes can't be certified then. The state legislature can't certify an unlawful vote count.
So the state would not certify it, and then what would happen after that?
What we would ask for is that you deduct in those counties the number of votes that we have proven were unlawfully examined.
Okay.
So it's easiest in Pennsylvania because we've done the arithmetic. We can count 633,000 votes that were submitted without any observation by a neutral observer, and certainly not by a Republican.
Okay.
In Detroit.
You want them thrown out. You don't want a recount. You want them thrown out.
Well, there's no reason to recount them. You can no longer tell whether they're valid or not. Once you remove the envelope, you remove the only thing that tells you whether they're valid or not.
Right. That becomes the naked ballot at that point.
That's why mail-in voting, even by justices of the Supreme Court 10 and 12 years ago, was thought to be a horrible thing to do.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to have to run, but I appreciate your sharing.
Thank you for the hearing, because a lot of networks don't allow us to bring this information to the public.
Well, we appreciate you talking to us, bringing us up to date. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rudy Giuliani, thanks so much.
Newsmax TV is now America's fastest growing cable news channel. We give you the real.
But not on this show. Rudy Giuliani there, the Imperial, talking with Newsmax. So what he's looking at, and when Giuliani was knocking heads with the mob guys in New York, and with any organized criminal group, be it the Corleone family, be it the Genovese family, be it the Biden family, you know, it's there are plans, hence the term organized crime. Okay, there are plans, there are plots, there are schemes, there are things worked out. There are areas of cooperation set between various disparate groups to bring their nefarious scheme into play, whether it's skimming the take at a casino, running a protection racket, horses, girls, whatever it is, there's a plan, see? And what Giuliani is doing is he is uncovering and describing the plan, how these guys did it, the nuts and bolts of the operation. Now, this thing is huge. 10 states. And it's not like it isn't as if, you know, the Democratic leaders in these 10 states got up the next day after the election and said, well, you know what, here's what we're going to do. They had this worked out. They had this worked out from way back. Hell, they probably had this worked out as some type of a contingency plan since 2016. Just changed some of the characters. Swivel a little bit on the narrative, make the story fit another, you know, liberal Marxist nutbag perspective. not dead air. I'm just thinking about this. You know, it's again, there is no guarantee. And the things that we hear these guys, I'm sorry about that, hit the microphone. There's no guarantee that these cats are going to prevail. Again, you've got Sidney Powell, you've got Jay Sekulow, you've got the Imperial, you've got a lot of keen legal minds working on the behalf of the president. I'm just hoping that this stuff comes up before some of the judges that he's been able to appoint. And the thing is, if they find, and if the evidence, sorry, I was leaning back, and if the evidence is overwhelming and they find just in one place, just one place, let's say Pennsylvania. Let's say that the evidence is so overwhelming and that the witnesses' stories are so compelling and everything is just right out there in the open and shut. Well, once that precedent is established and we find fundamentally the same set of circumstances in every state, conceivably with a little fine-tuning on whatever each individual state's, and that's federalism for you, each individual state's election laws are, we're going to see fundamentally the same outcome. And if you really want to get an idea, if we're trying to find out just exactly how egregious this stuff is, all they were talking about right there was the mail-in ballots. Now, I know you guys have heard about something called Scorecard. You've probably heard about something called Dominion, a ballot and election software, a computer software package. And Andrea Widberg is a frequent contributor at American Thinker, and we use her stuff a lot. And she came up with something today, I think it was, and it's this. When computers cheat, just like with humans, they inevitably leave evidence behind. Three things we're going to learn from what we have here from Andrea Whitberg. Number one, the Supreme Court can consider statistical evidence of fraud. In other words, you know, how widespread or how isolated was it? And they can order a new election. Number two, most of the computers used for voting in America have a built-in mechanism that allows votes to be weighted in favor of a candidate. If someone does tell a computer to mess with the election outcome, the computer's processes will inevitably create unnatural data trails that prove human intervention in vote counts. And that's what happened in three Michigan cities. The Supreme Court, we're going to go through a little bit of law here. After President Ford lost, I'm not going to cite the numbers or any of that crap. After President Ford lost in 1976, Republican voters sued New York, the state of New York, alleging that systemic fraud deprived them of their voting rights. The district court allowed the suit and stated the following legal test. Number one, the plaintiffs have to prove specific acts of misconduct. Number two involved willful and knowing ballot fraud. Number three, that this willful and knowing ballot fraud was committed by state officials or private persons acting jointly with state officials. That number four, changed the outcome of the election. Those are the points that the plaintiffs had to satisfy. The court held that the plaintiffs could introduce expert opinion, statistical analysis showing that voting patterns markedly deviated from the predictable uniformity to be found in random samples from election counts that were honest. If the plaintiffs won, said the court, they could get an order requiring a new presidential election. Any other outcome would fail to protect election integrity, especially in presidential elections. And that election integrity is essential to a free and democratic society. Now, the Donahue plaintiffs were unable to meet the legal test because they did not introduce sufficient evidence showing that fraud changed the outcome. However, there is an unending flow of evidence in this year's elections, both witness testimony and data evidence showing fraud sufficient enough to have changed the election's outcome in the contested states. Some of the statistical data that Trump needs can be found in a video that I'm going to tell you about. The guy's name, the guy's name is Shiva Ayyadurai. He is a multi-credentialed MIT grad whom the left despises. And he works with a guy named Benny Smith, who's a software engineer, election commissioner, data analyst, and Phil Evans, inventor, engineer, and data analyst, to show massive voting machine fraud in three Michigan counties. Up to now, we've just been talking about the mail-in ballots, the cheat by mail. Now we're talking about the mechanized, the machine fraud. Ayyadurai leads with some of these fundamentals first. I know it's kind of weedy, man, but just you got to hang in there. First, most tabulation using computers is fraught with ambiguity and the potential for errors. We've learned the ballots going into the system can be fraudulent. They could be dead voters or fake ballots or whatever. Democrat-run states increase the potential for fraud with mass mail-in voting. Prohibitions against voter ID and failure to check signatures. Second, we don't know what goes on inside the computers. The computers work by taking a snapshot of each ballot and then working off that snapshot. By law, these snapshots must be saved for 22 months, but Democrat-run counties and states tend to delete them immediately. I wonder what that's all about. Third, we do not have evidence tying voters to the ballots fed into the computers. After all, since voters leave empty-handed, it's going to be tough for them to do that. Moreover, if voters enter data on the computer screen and then hand a printout to a poll worker, although voters can see accurate words on that printout, they have no idea if the coding that the computer reads is accurate. And this is the thing that we really, really need to pay attention to. Almost all voting machines, including Dominion's voting machines, they are intentionally programmed with something called a weighted race feature. And this allows the computer to add a multiplier to a candidate's actual vote. For example, the machine could automatically multiply every Biden vote by some number over one. And in the video, Ayyadurai carefully demonstrates that in Oakland, Macomb, and Kent counties, the machines were set up. Okay, let me say that again. The machines were set to systematically take votes away from Trump and hand those same votes to Biden. The outlier was Wayne County, which is a heavily Democrat minority county. Not only did the machine not steal Trump's votes, but the data showed that Trump overperformed in this county, although not enough to win it. Now, intriguingly, the more heavily Republican a precinct was, the more votes the machine stole from Trump and gave to Biden, creating a beautifully sloping line on a graph that can never occur naturally. If you know how to read them, machines apparently are rotten liars, and it's noteworthy how ambiguous the data can be. For just three of those four counties we talked about in Michigan that were analyzed here, the analysis showed that Trump's margin was reduced by a minimum. Now, again, out of three of those four counties, Trump's margin was reduced by a minimum. Could have been more, but it was at least 138,000 votes. Now, imagine if this type of vote theft occurred in Michigan's other 80 counties. And, of course, keep in mind that Michigan is one of the states that allegedly passed thousands of fraudulent ballots into those voting machines. When you consider that Biden allegedly won by less than 3%, the combination of voting machine manipulation and illegal votes means Trump is right. He probably won Michigan handily. This is the kind of evidence, this is the level of conspiracy that we're looking at. And we're down at the bottom of the hour. I think we'll take a little break right now, and we will be back with more. Play a little bit of music. I've got another. Her name is Melissa Carone, and that's the woman, that's the young woman that Giuliani was referring to when he said they had someone come forward. I think it was in Michigan. We will be back. We're going to play a little music here, and we will be back with more of something. We'll be back with more of Conservative's Perspective right here on Patriot Nation Radio Network. Once again, guys, Mark's not going to be on tonight. He's in the middle of a hurricane, or at least that was what he had predicted he would be about this time. So thoughts and prayers with Mark. Hope he and his family are safe, and I know we'll be hearing from him soon. We will be back with more of Conservative's Perspective after this.
I woke up this morning, toes out of my shoes. Cold north wind was a howling, bringing in the blues. I said, blues, good morning, I don't want to fight. Excuse me while I have a smoke, if I can't find a light. Open up the door and let the good times in. Don't let nothing stand in your way. Just open up the door and let the good times in. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today. I went to that cupboard, found the cupboard bare. What happened to that sip of wine I had hidden there? Over in the corner, a little mouse laid on its side. He was wearing such a grin, I thought the mouse had died. Open up the door and let the good times in. Don't let nothing stand in your way. Open up the door and let the good times in. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today. I won't call my baby when she got to the phone. I kinda had a little feeling my baby was not alone. She said, Daddy, I'm busy. Some other time. I don't need that woman, but I sure could use a dime. Open up the door and let a good time in. Don't let nothing stand in your way. Open up the door and let a good time in. Tomorrow's gonna be better today.
Okay. James Mostick here, Conservatives Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version of the program. Moves out across the nation on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. We do that 4 p.m. Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Melissa Caron. That's her name. She is an IT contractor for Dominion Ballot Counting Software. And if what she is saying, and we've got the clip, if what she's saying is true, this would explain how the ballots in Michigan were manipulated. Ms. Caron contracted work for Dominion, a company providing software services for ballot counting machines in Detroit. She was sent to Detroit, Michigan, to provide technical support for the ballot counting process while she was there. She noticed poll workers repeatedly double scanning ballots to generate multiple votes from the same batch of ballot sheets. Now, when she reported this to her employer, Mr. Nick Economakis of Dominion, Caron was told it was not her role to review what the poll workers were doing, essentially to ignore it. Ms. Caron says she witnessed election workers filling out ballots, fraudulently signing ballots, as well as the unloading of vans in an area of the Detroit election tabulation facility she was not permitted to inspect. She was on Fox Business with Lou Dobbs. I think it was yesterday. We've got the clip here, and we are going to play it. This stuff is systemic, people. It's everywhere. Well, it's everywhere. You got the damn Democrats. 7-minute clip. Once again, you know how I am about this. I'd rather you heard it from them than me half-assed paraphrasing it. Melissa Caron on Lou Dobbs.
Breaking news now. We have obtained a new whistleblower complaint from a woman in Wayne County, Michigan. It lays out in detail what appears to be outright illegality that took place inside the TCF Center in downtown Detroit. The sworn affidavit signed by IT worker Melissa Caron exposes how ballots were scanned and counted, in some cases multiple times, how Republicans were pushed aside, cut out of the oversight process to which they are entitled, and even details of how ballots were illegally altered by other election workers. Part of her affidavit reads, quote, "I witnessed countless workers rescanning the batches without discarding them first, which resulted in ballots being counted 4 to 5 times." Joining us tonight with much more is the author of that sworn affidavit, Melissa Caron. She was contracted by Dominion Voting Services to offer technical support while votes were being counted in Detroit. David Kallman, who is Melissa's attorney, joins us here this evening. We welcome you both. And Melissa, I want to just say, first of all, my compliments to you for having the courage to step forward and to say exactly what you saw and to defend the integrity of our electoral process. And I want you to know I'm deeply grateful, and I'm sure all Americans are deeply grateful to you. Let me start with the most egregious part of what I read in your affidavit. Multiple counts of the same ballots. How did that happen?
So the workers are handed ballots in stacks of 50s. They're referred to as batches, and they run mm-hmm. them through the tabulators. When the ballot has any kind of a mark on it, it'll stop. The tabulator will stop completely, and the computer will put up an error, and it'll say, you know, ballot number 25 has an error. And
right.
so the
right.
process would be to take ballot number 25, as well as all of the other ballots that had already went through the tabulator, off, put them right. back in a pile, put ballot number 25 on top of the stack, discard the whole batch, and rescan it.
And that's, and instead they went through that process several times. Describe the night shift chaos that you described. Food vans apparently showing up, but not with food, but with ballots, apparently. Give us a sense of what happened there.
So there. So I worked a 24-hour shift. I started at 6 a.m. and I got off at 6 p.m. or 6 a.m. The next day. So I started at 6 a.m. November 3rd, got off at 6 a.m. November 4th. So I was there during their day shift and their night shift. The city provides the workers with food for their shift. Well, they only had enough food for one-third of their workers.
Oh boy.
So that is the reason why they were claiming that these vans were brought in. But these vans did not have food taken out of them.
And the vans that showed up, they were supposed to be filled with food. What did they have in them? Do you know?
I never saw anything being brought out of the vans. I know that whatever was being brought out of the vans was being brought out of the back of the vans, but I was not allowed over in that area at all. But the vans were definitely not big enough to be carrying enough food for two-thirds of those workers.
Well, it's all very suspicious. It is very clear that you have witnessed highly irregular activities in that counting session. And David, I want to turn to you. How well protected is Melissa as a contractor for Dominion voting, the voting systems, and your role here?
Well, I'm the lead attorney with Great Lakes Justice Center. We filed the complaint on behalf of two voters and residents of Wayne County. Melissa is one of our witnesses who provided an affidavit, as well as many other people. We have affidavits from another whistleblower, Jesse Jacob, who is an employee of the city of Detroit, worked in the election department. She delineates all kinds of fraud and problems she saw. And then also an attorney, Zachary Larson, who's a former Michigan Assistant Attorney General, worked under both Republican and Democrat administrations. And he saw many acts that were incredibly concerning to him. We got an affidavit just this afternoon, Lou, from Ruth Johnson, who is our former Secretary of State, who just left that position 2 years ago. And she reviewed our complaint and all the affidavits, and she recommended to the court, we had a hearing today at 3 o'clock, and she recommended to the court that the court intervene and take action to order an audit. Michigan now has a new constitutional provision that allows voters to request a results-oriented audit to ensure the accuracy and integrity of elections. So we're asking the court, and we did it today. We had about a two-hour hearing. The judge is going to rule at noon on Friday as to whether or not an injunction will issue to stop the certification of the votes, and then whether or not there will be a audit ordered, as well as a protective order to protect evidence so it's not destroyed. So that's what we asked for today, and Melissa's been very brave to come out with her affidavit as well as the others. You can go to our website, greatlakesjc.org, and you can see the complaint and all the affidavits and read it all for yourself.
Right. Great. Super. David, thank you very much. Melissa, as we go, I want to give you the last word. You work for Dominion. Did you complain to Dominion about what you were seeing? And what was their response? We have just about a minute.
I absolutely did. I confronted my boss, and he told me that he doesn't want to hear it. He didn't want to hear it. He said, it is not our job to be running their election. We are here to assist with IT.
Melissa Carone, again, our thanks for stepping forward. David Coleman, thank you. We appreciate you both joining us tonight to shed further light on what was going on in this country on election night, and a bit of what before and after looked like as well.
So given the size of that facility, I mean, that was Detroit, it isn't much of a stretch of the imagination to imagine that very same thing going on in every other tabulation facility in every major Democrat city in the country, even in the not so major cities. Everywhere. Everywhere. Where you got the Democrats, you're going to have this. It's crazy. It is systemic. It was nationwide. It was massive. And I don't, and if we just look, now what we just saw here, okay, was one person, but it was anecdotal in a way. There are other places where it's been recorded, where, you know, you, like Giuliani said, you've got witnesses, you've got testimony, you've got physical, I'm guessing, evidence or other types of evidence that point to this conspiracy. And I would imagine that when they tackle this and it finally gets to a point where folks, and we talked about this on Tuesday show, where when it gets to the point where folks, you know, one day here, a couple of weeks from now, there's a knock on the door and there's a couple of clean cut fellas in suits standing there wanting to talk to you about some of the irregularities that took place in your polling place or some of the irregularities that happened in that area that you were assigned to. And these guys are going to not all of them, but some of them are going to cave. They're going to get scared. You want to go to jail for Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, the super spreader, as she's known in the age of COVID. Who wants to do that? Some 30-year-old dude who would probably much rather spend the rest of his life in debt for his college loans that got him a degree that's absolutely useless than go to prison. Sure, what do you want to know? If I tell you this, can you help me out with that student loan thing? So if they go the way that Giuliani says, and let's not talk about redoing the election. Although, as we discussed, the Supreme Court can make that happen. But let's not talk about that. Let's just talk about doing away with the votes that we know have been tainted either procedurally through human interference or votes that have been programmed to have been discounted from various machines. So it's not a glitch. It was never a glitch. It was not a design flaw. It was a programmed feature to those folks who, you know, were schooled in the way of manipulating it. Not a glitch, man. It's part of the plan. But let's just toss the tainted votes. And let's just toss, I don't know, say the most conservative estimate on those tainted votes. We got a Trump victory. We still have a Trump victory. Okay, Trump won. Biden lost, and anything otherwise is a lie. You know it. I know it. I don't care what Fox News said. They're dead to me, by the way. I don't care what CNN says or NBC or CBS or MSNBC. I don't care what they say. He's not the president-elect. And he didn't win. Joe Biden sat in Congress and the White House, vice presidency, for almost 50 years, man. 50 years. Didn't do a thing, man. Didn't do anything. Enriched himself, sold his soul to the highest bidder, along with his country's safety and security and stability. For 47 years he did that. Enriched himself, enriched his family.
Come on, man.
No, seriously, Joe, you know you did. Stop with that. He sold himself out to Wall Street. He sold himself out to the extreme left. He sold himself out to AOC and those shrewish harpies. Liberal harpies. He has 12 people. His rallies sucked harder than Hillary Clinton's. And there wasn't even a pandemic in Hillary Clinton's day. She was just a dishonest, unlikable candidate. She sucked. And Joe couldn't do any better than her. It was pathetic. 14 people in little white circles, 6 foot in diameter. There's no enthusiasm for this cat. People weren't, if they voted for Joe Biden, it wasn't for Joe Biden, it was because they were probably so deranged in their hatred of Donald Trump that, you know, they would have voted for Hitler and still call Trump Hitler, make Hitler look good. He's not the president-elect, he's not the president of any damn thing. And they started all this. They started all this on the weekend. You know, we talked about the Friday document dump. That would have been me a few years back. But the Friday document dump, and both sides do it. You got something. There's a story out there. The optics aren't that great on it. You want to try and get out in front of it. You know you got to take a hit on it. But rather than take that hit on a Monday at the beginning of a news cycle, you do it at the end of the week. And in Washington speak, you know, everybody's going home. They're leaving the Beltway. They're splitting. They're not listening to the radio. So there is a minimal level of coverage. And a certain amount that's expected. And it's acceptable. Well, that's what they did here, but it's kind of the reverse. They just kind of went because the president and his legal team, and they were banking on this, not the president, but those Democrat bastards, they were banking on this. So they use the ensuing 2 or 3 days of uncertainty to try to establish a narrative that it's Joe. It's Joe all the way, baby. We got it. He's the man. The networks get in on it. CNN gets in on it. Fox gets in on it. You're dead to me, Fox. I like Gutfeld and I like Carlson. And John Gibson, if he's still on the radio, he was pretty cool too. All these people are saying it's President-elect Biden. You remember that lame, stupid, what was it called? The office of the president-elect. You remember when Barack Obama, his first term, and he won the election, and it had gone to his head, and he was hopped up on goofballs and Boone's Farm, and he opened up the office of the president-elect, which people looked like, damn, son, what? Huh? What? Okay, well, they've just taken that thing a step further, and they're trying to extend legitimacy to a guy that hasn't earned it. Nutshell, I mean, that's what we're talking about. So, over the weekend, the media had, you know, they continued over this, over the last few days, where we had Thursday, to build on this shaky foundation that they poured on Saturday when they started calling. And I'll tell you what, I remember that was, that really, I was, as most of you know, one of my recreational gigs, if they still allow us to do it, Civil War reenacting. I'm honored to be the captain of Bryan's Battery and also the 1st West Virginia Artillery, Federal Artillery. And we have our own gun. We've got a 3-inch ordnance rifle, full-size artillery piece, rifle barrel. And it's, you know, it is an exact replica. If you put it amongst guns that were made in 1862, you're not going to be able to tell them apart. Well, anyway, it was time for some maintenance. And was out there with a reenactor friend of mine, and we were doing the gun, and we were working on it. And she looked up from her phone and said that it was, I think it was Fox, at that time it was Fox, calling the election for Joe Biden. Well, like a lot of people, when I heard that, there was a pretty strong wave. Number one, anger and frustration. It really pissed me off because I knew Joe Biden didn't win that. You know Joe Biden didn't win that race. We all know that that doddering old fool did not win that presidential election. We knew that they would cheat. We knew it. Talk about Tuesday night. They've been cheating since 1960, probably even before then. So I looked at my friend Melissa, who had just told me this, and I just shook my head. I mean, literally, I had to kind of stop what I was doing because I was just thinking about it. Because everybody knows how important this is. Everybody knows how important this is. Everybody knows what the stakes are here. So there. And it bugged me, man. It bugged me because I'm looking at this cannon that we're tooling out and maintaining and getting some stuff done. And I'm thinking, with these fools in the White House, with Joe Biden and the super spreader there, they could come and take it. They could arrest us. Well, not until we burned off two or three rounds, at least, from a fortified position. But not, okay, no. Somebody will hear that and they'll think, whatever. I'm not advocating violence. But that was, you know, these people are strong anti-Second Amendment cats. They don't go over the Second Amendment at all. And I always used to laugh. I've got a picture of me somewhere standing with a gun, just about like ours, in my Civil War rig. And I made a caption for it and said, you know, liberals are worried about me having an AK-47. Load shell. And so it bothered me. It really did. But at the same time, I'm thinking about this. And I'm thinking about the disappointment. And I'm thinking about the frustration and the anger. And I mean, it was a visceral response. I responded kind of physically. I mean, I throw up or cry or anything like that. But I had to stop what I was doing and think about this because it bothered me. And in the ensuing days, I finally came to the conclusion about a couple of different things. Done it with one. But it's very time consuming and you got to be daggone careful, and I wouldn't. We've talked about providence, and we've had guests on that we've talked about providence, and that we are living in providential times. I do believe that. And I've just thought, you know, unless he's done something to really make God mad, which I kind of doubt because he's been pretty steady this whole time, you know, basically for the last four, since he came down that escalator, the Democrats have been loaded for bear for this guy. And they've tried every conceivable trick in the book to try and trip him up to ruin this country. And this whole time, God has had his hand around this man and around his family. Look at all the things that they have thrown against this cat in the last 4 years. And not just the Democrats, man. There's a lot of never-Trumpers, a lot of rhinos, Republicans in name only, a lot of posers out there. You know, they don't like the guy. I don't know why, but they don't. He's not one of them, I guess. Not really. It's kind of like Caddyshack. You know, you guys, you got another movie I'm talking about? Bill Murray, Ted Knight. Anyway, it's a kind of a coming of age movie, kind of a comedy back in the 80s. And it takes place around this country club. And, you know, these are all, and it's the stereotypical WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, conservative country club, yuppie types. And there's this guy comes in, and he's a developer. He's a real estate developer. And the character is played by Rodney Dangerfield. And he's this coarse, loose, in-your-face kind of guy. And he just goes completely against the grain from all these establishment types at the country club. And that's what we're seeing right now in the White House. It's Caddyshack, man. And Donald Trump is Chervik. And they don't like it. They don't like it at all. And so they've been hitting on the guy too and smacking him around and beating him up. But God has protected him. God has sustained him throughout all this. His family, I mean, everybody's been taking shots at him. Show's producer Melissa just told me there that Biden is talking about giving citizenship to over 11 million illegals ASAP. Now, let me tell you about that. That 11 million illegals is our pal, and I have been taught so well by our buddy Michael Cutler. It's not 11 million. Let's say every one of those 11 million have three dependents. Yeah. Imagine what it does to the infrastructure. Every school you go to, you try to talk to a kid, no habla. It's going to be way more than a million. It's going to be way more than a million. Well, then, what's this? 11 million. Okay, these are the things, man. This is the kind of stuff it dilutes. These people don't need to be here, and I'm not being a racist. I'm not being. If you've got something to offer us, then yes. Okay, and when I say something, I'm not talking about maybe, you know, a medical degree. Maybe you have a solid work ethic. Maybe you're a great painter of houses. Okay. I was a house painter once. I was a house painter for about 4 years. It was the biggest damn house I ever saw in my life. I didn't think we were ever going to get finished. But, and if we look again beyond the hand of God being around this man's family, this is not a stupid guy. Donald Trump is not a stupid guy. I've said it before and I'll say it again. He is probably, without a doubt, one of the most intuitively gifted, natural, untrained psychologists the 21st century has ever seen. Throughout this whole process. Well, those are Tucker's numbers. I gave Cutler's numbers. And we are a Cutler household here. So we have to be or he won't come back. So he's been basically, and look at how everything's happened. Donald Trump has fundamentally been two steps ahead of everybody on the Democrat side, on the Marxist, progressive, leftist side. He's been two steps ahead of them the entire game. And they've never had a prayer of catching up. Now let's add into this a couple other things. There is nobody in the history of entertainment that understands a story arc. I don't care who they are, whether it was Cecil B. DeMille, D.W. Griffith, Howard Hawks, John Ford, Francis Ford Coppola, doesn't matter. Nobody has, again, that intuitive understanding of a story arc like Donald Trump. It is a very safe bet that he undoubtedly not only anticipated this level of cheating, or not only anticipated cheating, but further anticipated this particular level of cheating, this massive, extensive nationwide conspiracy of cheating going on by the Democrats. I cannot help but think, you know, he knows what he's doing. And at the end of this, he, therefore we, will prevail. And at this point in time, I'm not exactly sure that we can't look at it but any other way than that. There is, and I haven't talked about it yet, but according to Gateway Pundit and Sidney Powell, the great Sidney Powell, she was on Mornings with Maria Bartiromo. and says that Nancy Pelosi has a link. And not only Nancy Pelosi, but Dianne Feinstein has a link to this company, Dominion. And the more they dig, the more they find. So we move beyond the anecdotal versions of evidence, and that's the stuff that really resonates with us. The stories like we heard from Melissa Caron. The individual stories. You know, we see pictures of the people in Detroit putting cardboard up on the windows at the tabulation facility so people can't see in. So the observers cannot observe. There's no disputing these things. As Giuliani said, there's no disputing these things. They've occurred. We have testimony. We have witnesses. We have, I guess, photographic or video documented evidence of these things as they have happened. Because I've seen the pictures. You have too on social media. What's happened in Pennsylvania may be telling. Now, here's something, all right? Today, at Real Clear Politics, I'm looking at a screen grab showing the presidential vote tallies as it stands right now. Biden and Harris have 259 electoral votes. That may have changed in the hour since I brought this up. And the Trump-Pence campaign team have 47.5, 214 electoral votes. Of that 259 votes, when Biden loses states and they revert back into the Trump win column, he loses electoral college votes. And Donald Trump is awarded electoral college votes. Are there enough crooked judges out there probably. I mean, it's possible that, the greatest legal minds in the country can't overcome a cabal of corrupt and resolute criminals intent on carrying out this coup. But here's the thing, no matter what Fox News tells you, no matter what CNN tells you, no matter what MSNBC tells you, there is no president-elect. Now, he can call himself whatever he wants, okay? He can call himself Joe. He can call himself Jill. Every now and then he forgets and thinks he's Hunter. Just as long as the media dutifully parrots that choice, he can lay claim to whatever title his demented mind desires, including president-elect. There is still, because these states, good question, if Biden has lost votes, why hasn't Trump gotten over the 214 mark yet? Well, because they have not been awarded. This is ongoing. They're just now in the process of looking through these ballots, and they've got a few days, but they don't have a whole lot of time, because I think it's December 13th that the Electoral Congress convenes, and they certify the results of the election after Congress. But here's the thing. If the election results on a state-by-state basis we won't go any smaller on a state-by-state basis. Those votes are going to change. And if they can't certify the election, if they cannot certify the election, then that means one of two things. That means that either the entire country has a redo, or they focus on these areas where there have been the highest levels of contention and the highest levels and evidence of election fraud. I don't know what else we can say about it right now, and God's will, I guess. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. The last thing we're going to talk about, man, I didn't really mean to do this, but kind of went that way. And I want you to hear this. Ted Cruz, Andrew McCabe, former deputy director Andrew McCabe, was testifying in front of the Senate, I think it's the House Judiciary Committee. Anyway, one of the groups looking into the frame-up of the president and the coup that subsequently followed his election, or winning the election, rather. Ted Cruz, and you know, these guys, it's always theater. It's a lot of good theater at times, a lot of it bad theater at times, but theater. And even as theater, it has its own weight, it has its own gravitas and what we can get from it. Even though it may not be much, there are things that we can walk away from. I want you to listen to this. It is what, 9 minutes, and then we're going to go ahead and say goodnight after that. 9 minutes, Ted Cruz, Andrew McCabe, for a big, tough FBI guy, this dude is sure a major league weenie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McCabe, welcome. I'd like to start by discussing the Flynn investigation. As you know, the FBI team investigating General Flynn prepared a memo dated January 4th, 2017, to close the investigation into Flynn as lacking any basis to continue. The FBI had investigated and failed to find any derogatory information about General Flynn and determined he was no longer a viable candidate for investigation. But then, according to Peter Strzok, the seventh floor, the top brass at the FBI intervened to keep the investigation open. Were you the one who made the decision to keep the investigation open?
I don't remember making that decision, but I certainly supported keeping the case open. I don't remember being the person that made that phone call, but I think that it was the right move to continue investigating once we had uncovered the information that we found.
So despite the fact that the career investigators concluded that there was no basis and no derogatory information and recommended closing it, you made the decision, or at least you agreed with the decision to keep the investigation open. On what basis?
Well, I don't know that I don't recall that the investigators determined there was no basis to continue. My recollection from the conversations we were having about the Flynn case.
The memo is
time,
a memo to close the investigation because it could not find any, quote, derogatory information about Flynn, and he was, quote, no longer a viable candidate for investigation. That's not ambiguous, is it?
No, that's not the same as what you said before. And I, of course, don't have that memo in front of me, but our feeling at that time was that we had found very little, if any, incriminating evidence about General Flynn, until, of course, we found potentially very incriminating evidence about him.
Are you referring to the Logan Act theory?
No, sir. I'm referring to the fact that we uncovered that General Flynn was having the sort of direct contact with the government of Russia that we were looking for in all of the first four cases of Crossfire Hurricane.
Did you support using the Logan Act as a basis to go after General Flynn?
The Logan Act was not used as a basis to go after General Flynn. We opened the case.
You're aware of the White House meeting where the notes show that Vice President Biden at the time directly suggested using the Logan Act to go after General Flynn.
I'm not aware of that.
You're not aware of that. Well, those are notes from your colleagues.
I don't mean to interrupt, but
Senator, I can say what the reasons that I agreed with and approved opening the case. And that was because we thought that General Flynn might be having inappropriate contacts with Russia. That's why we opened the case.
Inappropriate. So the only basis, this is a decorated three-star general. The only basis that was put forward for what I think was a bogus political persecution and prosecution was an alleged violation of the Logan Act, which has never been used to prosecute anybody in the history of the Department of Justice. True?
No, I don't believe that's true. I think if
name one person that's ever been prosecuted under the Logan Act.
No, I was referring to why we opened the case against General Flynn. I'm not aware of prosecutions of the Logan Act.
I think for those who are listening, we're talking about a conversation between General Flynn and the Russian ambassador after the election, while he's the national security advisor in waiting. Is that correct, Senator Cruz?
We are. He's the incoming national security advisor. And Mr. McCabe, yesterday on MSNBC, Ben Rhodes, the former deputy national security advisor to President Obama, said that foreign leaders are already having conversations with Joe Biden, quote, talking about the agenda they're going to pursue January 20th. Mr. McCabe, based on that testimony, do you believe Joe Biden is violating the Logan Act?
I'm not aware of Ben Rhodes' statements or
take it on faith. He said what I read. Assuming that quote is accurate, it's a verbatim quote, is that a violation of the Logan Act under any plausible theory?
I am not prepared to take your statement on faith. And I am also not prepared to conduct legal analysis.
All right, you're a lawyer. Have you ever answered a hypothetical in court? If it is correct that I am accurately quoting it, something the Department of Justice frequently did wrong in this investigation, if that is what Ben Rhodes said, if Joe Biden is talking with foreign leaders right now, does it violate the Logan Act, yes or no?
I'm not going to opine on a hypothetical question about what the Biden campaign
might be. He is talking with foreign leaders, and it doesn't violate the Logan Act because the Logan Act is unconstitutional, which is why it's never been used to prosecute anyone. You authorized using it to go after General Flynn as part of a political persecution. I can give you the answer. Hell no, Joe Biden is not violating the Logan Act. The reason you won't say it is because that was your flimsy political basis to go after a decorated war hero because you disagreed politically with President Trump.
Kapow! Sir, none of that is correct.
Which part? Pick any aspect.
We didn't investigate General Flynn because we were concerned that he might violate the Logan Act. We were concerned that General Flynn...
It is your testimony the Logan Act was not a predicate for the FBI and DOJ investigation of General Flynn. Really?
There were no discussions of the Logan Act.
There were no discussions of the Logan Act at the FBI or DOJ. That is your testimony under penalty of perjury before this committee.
Senator,
and I warn you, there is abundant evidence that there were.
Senator, if you're not going to let me finish my answer, I'm not going to be able to accurately answer your question.
Please go ahead. What is your testimony? Is your testimony, you just said there was no discussion of the Logan Act. Does that remain your testimony?
No, Senator, that's where you cut off my testimony.
Please continue.
I would like to finish my answer.
Please continue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When we initiated the case against General Flynn, it was not initiated for or as a result of any discussion of the Logan Act.
Mr. McCabe, you're being non-responsive to the question. I didn't ask about the initiation. The Logan Act was a late pretext that was adopted after you investigated him and couldn't find anything, and the career investigators recommended closing it. All right, since my time is expiring, although the chairman took a little bit of my time, so I'm going to take a little bit of it back. Did James Comey authorize you to disclose information about the Clinton Foundation investigation to the press?
I didn't need James Comey's authorization.
I didn't ask if you needed it. I asked, did he authorize you to disclose it? That's a yes or no question.
I authorized the disclosure of that material.
You're still not answering my question. Did James Comey know about it, and did he authorize it? Yes or no? Did he know about it?
To my recollection, sir, yes, he knew about it.
Did he authorize you? Did he in any way give you the green light explicitly or implicitly?
I didn't ask Jim Comey.
I'm not asking whether you asked. I'm asking, okay, according to the Washington Times, April 18th, 2018, Mr. McCabe insisted he told his boss that he had authorized disclosure about the Clinton investigation, but Mr. Comey has denied this claim. And Mr. McCabe told investigators that Mr. Comey knew he had authorized disclosure and agreed it was a good idea. Is that accurate? Is that your testimony to this committee?
That is my recollection.
So you're aware that your testimony is 180 degrees opposite Mr. Comey's sworn testimony to this committee, in which he insisted he has never authorized anybody to leak to the press.
I'm not going to say what Director Comey said or didn't say to you. That would, however, your characterization of a leak is not accurate.
The FBI has records that will establish whether you're telling the truth or Mr. Comey's telling the truth.
Oh, God, you dickweed. Jesus. Now, this is what gets me, okay? Now, everybody can see this dude's a stooge. He's a weenie, obviously. He's a weenie. Deputy Director of the FBI. Now, that is a powerful and prestigious organization, law enforcement organization, in this country. I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not, but yeah, that once upon a time, they had their own TV show, radio. Jimmy Stewart did them. They were huge, man. They were huge. And it in a way, wounds me as a student of history / old guy to see the FBI of Melvin G. Purvis . The FBI of G. Gordon Liddy, a great American. If you haven't heard of G. Gordon, you don't know who he is, shame on you. I'm not telling you. You dig him up. Check it out. One hell of a guy. G. Gordon Liddy, the FBI of Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., for crying out loud. And it devolves into the, you know, Groot. I am Comey. James Comey. And this idiot, Christopher Wray is a rear guard action. The current director, he's not there to clean up anything. He's not there to straighten up the bureau. He's there to CYA. He's there to rear guard. He's there as a firewall. And these are the guys that tried to railroad a three-star general. And this was at the beginning. This was one of the ways that this was another way that they were trying to get to the presidency and destroy it, to drive a duly elected president from office. You let me finish. Me. Oh, God. What a poofter. Jesus. Okay, we're done. That's it. I'm stopping right here. We got to find a place to stop, and I may as well do here, because if I get jacked up, I'll go. I'm just not going to do that. We are heard twice a week here, Tuesdays and Thursdays, for the most part. Every now and then I'll throw a curveball in there and do a show just for kicks some other time. But traditionally, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Ordinarily on Thursdays, it is a one-hour program, because we're back-to-back with our man Mark Hoffman, the handsome one, El Guapo himself, Patriot Nation Radio Live. Mark didn't schedule the show tonight because, as I said earlier, the predictions were by the time he would be on the air, they would be roughing it out through Hurricane, I think it's Ida. So our thoughts and prayers to make sure that he and his family are safe, and I'm hoping that they are, and I'm confident that they are. He's a veteran at this. And we have a recorded version of the show that goes out over the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you ought to be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, mojo50.com, with the exception of Patriot Nation Radio. And I also want to talk about our good friend Gary Benford, United Patriots Uprising. Got a show coming up this Monday, I think, with Gary. It's going to be slam bang, and I can't wait to find out what's going on with it. And I'll probably do that here before the weekend's out. United Patriots Uprising, Gary Benford, every other Monday. That would be this Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some of the best talk-driven podcasting that you got out there, and we have it here, and we're inordinately proud of that. That's all the time we got, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the opportunity to spend a little bit of time talking about this stuff. I appreciate it tremendously. Spread the word. We're doing pretty good. Things are picking up in terms of our engagement with listeners across a couple of different platforms, and we're starting to grow a little bit, and that's always really cool. Tell your friends. We appreciate it tremendously. That's it. We'll be back Tuesday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. Lord willing, and the river don't rise. Till then, God bless you. God bless America. We will see you then. You guys take good care.